another episode of the TFD Performance Podcast. We are joined by TFD Performance Podcast regular and OG, Dr. Mike Pikarski, otherwise known as Dr. Kickass. Dr. Kickass, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going very well. Now, you're telling me you're getting ready for a new competition coming up. What are you getting ready for and what are you prepping for?
Nogi Worlds in Anaheim, second week of December.
How's the prep going for that one?
Well, it was going pretty good. I tweaked my back a little bit. And then all the holidays, it's probably fine, though, because like during Thanksgiving, I'm going to see my family. So I won't be able to see. Yeah, I won't be training. So, you know, it was it's kind of okay that I won't be able to train. So, you know, by next week, I'll be back at it.
How's prep look for you when you're getting ready for a competition like this? Now, obviously, you're a black belt in jiu-jitsu. We've spoken about that at length on the podcast, but you've obviously got this huge, huge knowledge in physical therapy going. When you do your training schedule, are you doing, like, how much do you dedicate to actual time on the mats? And then how much time are you doing, like, prehab or rehab work? How do you do all that?
So, skill training, so jiu-jitsu kind of is kind of like I build everything around that just because like I need training partners, right? You know what I mean? So there's regular classes, so I kind of figure out like what days I'm going to train, and then like I can kind of like organize my skill training with, you know, like the people I work with. Like, you know, again, do I want a specific goal in mind when I'm training? Do I just want to roll? Do I, you know, am I going to be focused more on takedowns, more focused on positional work? So IBGF is a little bit kind of, you know, some of the training is going to be geared towards IBGF. And with IBGF, in my opinion, it really comes down to like who scores first. So I got to make sure I have a good scoring game in addition to a good submission game. So once I figure that out, then I can kind of like tailor like my prehab, rehab, strength conditioning kind of around that, because again, it's just whenever I have free time. So kind of like when I started camp, I did kind of like a solid block on just like building, you know, maximal strength. And then I was focusing on building an aerobic base. Coming in about like 5 weeks before the tournament, then I started to switch gears because, you know, at some point hypertrophy and max strength, I'm really like the benefits are going to start to slow down as I get closer to the tournament. So I'd rather do more focused work, to make sure that I can perform optimally. So now I'm starting to switch gears on my conditioning. So it's like slightly higher intensity work. But I also can use like my aerobic training for recovery too. So, you know, at this point, I would say that like building a solid conditioning game is going to be the most important because I'm 3 weeks away. So that's kind of like how I look to organize my training.
Do you find in the gym when you're comparing yourself to other training partners, do you find that you get injured less frequently? Is that a thing that you notice?
That's a good question. I feel like it, well, there's two. So I do feel like I get injured less frequently, but I also feel like when I do have an injury, I know what I'm doing. So I can like, I've had a lot of people comment that they're like, oh, you never hurt. I'm like, no, I get hurt. It's just, I also rehab it. So it's usually not this long drawn out thing. It's usually pretty quick to get back.
Yeah, I had this conversation with the team physio when I was away for UFC 281, just in New York, that me and the team physio were talking about this. And a lot of the athletes were coming on and getting treatment from him for existing injuries. And he kept saying to me every day, he goes, oh, are you sure you have anything? Do you have anything you want to treat? And I said, no, man. Like, and I'm in a pretty heavy training block myself at the moment. You know, I'm training 20 plus hours a week. And I said, no, man, I don't really get that injured because I put so much effort into prehab and my strength conditioning as a focus to not be injured. And it's such a big problem athletes have, right? It's like, oh, I'm worried about my injury once I'm already injured. And like you said, there's two components to that. There's a lot that you can do beforehand to prevent that injury. And then once you do get injured, or if you get a little niggle, rather than just being like, oh yeah, you know what, I'll just train through it or train around it. There's so many other things that you can do to be proactive with that to get yourself back to almost full capacity, right? And that's what I want to talk to you about today, Dr. Kickass, because something I've noticed, especially in the last maybe 12 months, it's probably been around for a lot longer, and you'll probably attest to that. at least in the last 12 months, I've noticed in the jiu-jitsu world, maybe it's slow to get down to us down Australia and New Zealand, but I've noticed this concept of kin stretch, or exactly what we're talking about here, is putting your body in the best position to be strong in positions that you're going to be using for your sport, not just with the goal of preventing injuries, but to be able to perform at your best. That's something that I've noticed is really coming up on the rise. And it's something, you, to be honest, you introduced it to me a couple of years ago, and it's always been in the back of my mind. And since applying a lot of these concepts with not only myself and with our athletes, I've just seen how important this entire concept of prehabbing to prevent the injury, but also being smart once you do get injured. Let's start this podcast and let's talk about this whole idea of kin stretch for the person listening at home who's probably heard me say that and go, man, what's kin stretch? That's a funny word. Can you just explain, what does that even mean?
So kin stretch is a movement system that's based on functional range system concepts. And it's designed as a group class, right? So it's not necessarily as specific as it can be to you or me, because, like, again, if we're working with someone broad, that's kind of where kin stretch is. But it's a way to train our body optimally in a variety of different ways. So you asked me once, you know, what are some of the ways that we can keep people from getting injured? Where is some advice? And the way I look at it is that kin stretch will use movements for joint health. So if you look at literature, when it comes to keeping your joints healthy, you want to make sure that you can move a joint, but it's not just, can you move it arbitrarily, is you want to make sure that you have the ability to move a joint in every degree of freedom that it's supposed to go. And if you can't, or if you're trying to move your shoulder and like your whole body turns, that's, you're developing this compensation. So essentially you cannot isolate your joint, which means that joint is probably lacking degrees of freedom. Why that's specifically important for something like jiu-jitsu is, like, someone puts me in a Kimura. Okay, well, is my shoulder comfortable in that position? And it first comes, can we move the joint? Then we want to work on improving the mobility. But then that next component is, can we be strong in these awkward positions? Because jiu-jitsu, you know, like, people describe it as like yoga in reverse, right? You're like putting people in these awkward positions. So I have to make sure when I'm in these awkward positions that I'm strong there. Because again, if I have the ability to generate force, I have the ability to absorb force. And something like jiu-jitsu, where joint locks essentially are taking a joint to its end range, applying a force until something breaks. So whether I'm using this so that the tissue, the shoulder tissue, the connective tissue is strong enough to absorb that force, or it gives me a little bit more window to escape or tap so that I don't get injured, right? Because, you know, it's funny, like with jiu-jitsu people, like, they don't realize, they're like, oh, you know, my arm got straightened and, oh, it was only a few pops. What do you think a few pops were? Like, something happened. Like, it might not have been like a catastrophic thing, but essentially what you're doing is you're stretching connective tissue, and, you know, there's going to be micro trauma. But if you just continue to let that happen over and over again, that connective tissue is going to be weakened. So what can we do to start to strengthen that connective tissue? What can we do so that, you know, again, like, there's no long-term detrimental effect of jiu-jitsu, or at least if there is long-term, because, you know, most jiu-jitsu black belts do have quite a bit of injuries. How do we at least minimize that accumulation of chronic injury?
So in a nutshell, if we're talking about what the essence of this is, it's specified, and it's obviously you can apply this for lots of sports, but say if we're talking about jiu-jitsu specifically, you're moving in a lot of planes of motion and you're putting your joints in positions that are quite odd. And everyone who does jiu-jitsu remembers the first time they got armbarred or kimura or whatever, and just the pain that went through because your body's not used to being in that position. What the whole concept of kin stretch is exposing yourself to those positions in a controlled manner and building strength and getting comfortable at those end range of motions. Is that accurate to say?
I would say that's one way that you can use this movement practice, and that's how I use it. Is, again, making sure that I can move my body in a variety of different ways. But it's not like, you know, like, where I would differentiate from like other movement practices, like you take yoga, and there's nothing wrong with yoga, but yoga, people say, I want to get more flexible, I'll do yoga. But the problem with yoga is the yoga practice isn't necessarily to make you more flexible. It's a byproduct. Like you're doing a variety of different positions. You can work on your breathing. There's a lot of benefits. And in the process, you will get more flexible. It'd be like if you wanted to get strong, so you do manual labor. Well, yeah, you know, like you're going to get strong if you do manual labor, but that's a byproduct of something else. So I feel like something like kin stretch is a little bit more specific. So I want to have more hip mobility for guard retention. I want to have knees that are a little bit more resilient to leg locks. How can I specifically train my body? So, you know, it's like a more of a scientific, you know, methodology on how do I get the specific adaptations I'm looking for versus just doing a whole bunch of random stuff and then, you know, saying, well, okay, well, this is helping me get more flexible.
And what does that look like? Say if someone's like, okay, you've sold me. I want to do this because I want to spend less time being injured. And if I do get injured, I want to recover better and get back on the mats, because time on the mats is king when you're trying to become a better jiu-jitsu athlete. What does that look like if they say, yeah, okay, I want to do it? Where do they start and what does it look like when they're doing it?
So usually you start with something called a controlled articular rotation, or known as CARs. And what they are is you're really training that isolated joint movement for whatever. So maybe we're doing knee, and people don't realize this, but the knees have 2 degrees of freedom, means it bends and it straightens, but actually has like slight bits of rotation. That's kind of how heel hooks work. They don't rotate a ton, but they do rotate. So I want to make sure that if I have a healthy knee, that it can move in all of those planes. So, you know, if let's say our focus today is on knee, we're going to start doing these movements. And some of that is also just teaching your body, right? Because if I go to you and say, you know, like, let's rotate your knee, you'd be like, what are you talking about? You've never done that. So some of it is just teaching someone how to do that. Then we can look at, does this person have the capacity to rotate, or is their knee stiff? Like, let's say someone has a lot of meniscus pathology, you know, maybe they have a lot of like arthritis. So their knees might not rotate too much. So now we want to actually work on improving something called creating more knee workspace, which is, again, I want to make sure that the knee has the ability to passively move. Then, which is usually start with some type of passive stretch. Then what we do is we follow up with some type of isometric training. So again, if I'm trying to work on knee rotation, we can do an isometric on both sides. So again, if I'm trying to get more internal rotation of my knee, we can do a rotation in one way, and then we can do it in another way. So this is going to give us both sides of the joint, right? Because like, you don't just do an isometric in one plane. That's only going to strengthen one specific range of motion. I want to make sure that I can have a goal of creating more of a workspace. Then I want to reinforce it with that isometrics. And it's different than, like, a lot of times people will compare these concepts to like PNF, which is called a proprioceptive like muscular facilitation. But the problem with PNF is people, it's almost like a parlor trick. By like doing different isometric training, you can kind of relax some of the muscle receptors, which allow you to get more range of motion. But that's not why I'm doing isometrics. So like the isometrics and kin stretch or functional range conditioning, I'm using this as a joint preparation or joint strengthening concept. Because if you look at the literature, when you use like long range isometrics, they do have both hypertrophy and strength, like building strength, like maximal strength, when the proper intensity is used. So like traditionally in rehab, they might do like PNF stretching, where you're doing like a light isometric for like an arbitrary amount of time. So for me, I want to slowly build up. If I want to get like maximal strength, I need to do high intensity isometrics. So like, you know, you see in rehab, people do these isometrics and they're like fairly easy. Like the isometrics that I'm doing for my body are pretty similar to like the isometrics I'd be doing if I was trying to do like a one rep max deadlift. It's just much more isolated because I'm doing like my knee or my hip versus, you know, a compound movement like a deadlift.
How much time would someone have to dedicate to this program, say each day or however much each week? How much time does it take to see the benefits of this?
So I've been a physical therapist for many years now. So clinically what I've found is that people, if people are serious about something, they should be able to find 10 to 20 minutes of work a day that they can build into their routine to do things. Now, this could be, you know, like maybe you're doing like your car routine in the morning while you're making breakfast. This could also be like before a jiu-jitsu class, or this could be after, like this is part of your cool down. So if you have good time management skills, like you just build it into your routine. If like, let's say you already have an existing strength and conditioning, I do this as my joint preparation before I lift. So you ask, what is my strength program like? Well, if again, I figure out what my goal is for that training session. I figure out every joints that are needed. I'll do my cars for whatever joints I'm using. I'll do isometric training as priming. Then I will do my lifts or whatever. So it shouldn't be that you have to add a ton of time. It's just using your time a little bit better. When it comes to long-term gain, you know, I'm going to expect like hypertrophy with muscle tissue takes about 6 to 8 weeks. So we're thinking that, you know, biological tissue adaptation is going to take about 6 to 8 weeks. And clinically, I usually find about 6 weeks is a good marker of like being consistent, you know, a few times a week, 10 minutes a day, you start to get some benefits.
And you don't necessarily have to have access to a gym with weights and everything else, right? Like you can do this right before, like you said, your BJJ class or right after your BJJ class.
Absolutely. Like obviously, like when you have equipment, you can make things harder or you can do things differently. But for the most part, if I'm just doing joint movements, I can do this anywhere. If I'm just doing isometrics, I'm using myself to generate that force. And, you know, through the program, I kind of show people how to do that. And, you know, it's fairly natural. So that's one of the things I like, is you don't need stuff to do it.
What would you say the biggest benefits for a jiu-jitsu athlete at any level? What are the biggest benefits they're going to get from doing a program like this?
So again, it's hard to say, like we can't use injury prevention, but I definitely think it's going to mitigate injury, right? Because a lot of times people get injured because they, one, in jiu-jitsu, they just tap late, but you know, like they try movements or positions that they don't have, they don't have, right? You take like, a rubber guard or like inversion. Those aren't inherently dangerous positions. They're dangerous for people who can't get into that position. So one, creating global joint mobility is going to allow you to do whatever position you need to in jiu-jitsu. Second, by doing the isometric training, we're going to create a little bit more resilience. So even if, let's say, someone does put me in submission again, either A, that injury won't be as severe because that connective tissue is going to be prone to stress. So it's going to be a little bit stronger, a little bit more resilient. It also, again, gives me a little bit more of a window to escape. So again, if someone does put me in some type of leg lock, like can I use that to get out or tap? So again, it's a combination of, you know, injury mitigation, but also there's going to be that performance aspect. So if you take like, you know, one of the most iconic positions in jiu-jitsu is the guard. So what makes the guard so valuable is that you're using your legs to control a person. So let's say like a smaller person can use their legs to try to overcome a larger person. But that's all based on, can you get your legs, which is controlled by your hips because that's your proximal joint, in the position to use that. So whether my legs are blocking someone from passing, or can I rotate my legs in a certain position to set up my arm bars, my triangles, etc.
Yeah, it's interesting as you say it. I think of all the people that I train with who, for the most part, are really good athletes, and they might be really, really strong as well. Like I see them down in the gym and they're training really hard, but when we get on the mats and we roll, they just don't have this movement or that they're not comfortable in these positions. And for someone, if you're a bit more experienced as a practitioner, like I love to exploit that. I love to exploit that. I know if I could get you in this position and you're not comfortable there, or even if you're in a good position and then I can tweak that and get you in a more uncomfortable, I know you can't stay there for that long because I know your body isn't used to being there, and then you're eventually going to give up that position. I do, however, notice with the guys that put in a lot of time and they do this stuff, it's very, very difficult because they're just so comfortable in these positions. And then not only are they comfortable in it, they just rotate between them and it makes going against them really difficult. So there's huge, huge, huge performance benefits from a real practical sense here.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like, you know, I would say that like this type of training is like very, is like associated to what people call mat strength. Like everyone's like rolled with that guy who, like, again, they don't look impressive. And then they get them on the mat and they're like, holy shit, this guy is strong. You know, like, and again, like, so for me, like I'm like 170 pounds, which is like 77 kilos or something like that for all of the Aussies listening. So again, like I'm like a normal size guy. Like I'm not, I don't maybe look that strong, but people routinely will comment on how good my squeeze is. And obviously some of that skill, like I've been doing jiu-jitsu for a long time, so I understand how, but I do feel like this kin stretch, like learning how to isometrically ramp and using that is really developed and really, really, you know, like really giving me like a really good squeeze. So like when I lock on a position, like they are going to tap. Like I'm not going to burn out. It's strong enough to either put them to sleep or get them to tap. But then at the same time too, is like my ability to pin someone. Again, I'm not that big, but I can, like I use pressure passing, which is usually more of like a big guy move. But for me, like, again, use jiu-jitsu, which is leverage and that mat strength, I can still pin someone pretty well.
Who would you say this is relevant for? Is this as relevant for the guys who are white belts that are just, you know, starting out on their jiu-jitsu journey, or is it more relevant for the higher belts, you know, like the purple, browns, and blacks? Who's this relevant for?
So I would say both, right? Because, and I'm not going to like belt, I'm not going to decide like beginner and advanced. I'm going to break it up to like the recreational hobbyist and the professional athlete. So the recreational hobbyist is going to get a lot out of this training from, again, that injury mitigation. Like a lot of like recreational hobbyists, like jiu-jitsu is what they do for fitness. But the problem is, like we said, like jiu-jitsu like isn't really that good for your body. Like you're stretching your joints and you're putting yourself in these weird positions. So this is a good tool to supplement your jiu-jitsu so that you can stay in the game longer. Again, that injury mitigation. That professional athlete, you know, that someone who takes things seriously, again, the performance training is going to be super beneficial because, one, whether people realize or not, professional athletes still have a ton of chronic injuries. And like a lot of times chronic injuries is just like a joint, like, you know, something might have, the injury happened, it doesn't quite heal 100%. Well, why does it not heal 100%? Is because you're not doing anything to address that tissue, that connective tissue, to get it stronger and to kind of reestablish what that joint was supposed to do prior to their injury. So those professional athletes, we can deal with this because it's going to be the introduction to addressing these chronic injuries. But then again, that performance, you know, like this will also improve your mat strength. This is also going to improve your mobility. So you can do things like have that guard that people can't pass, or, you know, have those legs that can choke the shit out of someone and like they don't burn out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the value in this is just hugely immense. And I want to ask you one last question. We have gone over this, but I want to make this point really clear, the amount of time that it takes to do this, because I feel like so many athletes are put off doing additional mobility work because in their mind, they're like, well, you know, I'm already training once or twice a day and I've got to go sleep. I've got to recover. I've got to eat. I've got to do all these, and I've got to do life in between all of that. Just one last time, explain how much time each day and then over the course of the week you have to dedicate to this to see these massive benefits.
Yeah. I mean, so like I said, 10 to 15 minutes a day, you're going to see improvements. How often a day, I would say, you know, or how often during the week, I would say like 4 to 5, but again, it's very easy to build in. Like I can do my joint maintenance program while I'm making my breakfast. I can do it as a warm-up. So like this is my warm-up. And then after training is when I do my isometric training. If I'm doing my strengthening, like this is my prep. Because if you look at like what a lot of times people do for their warm-ups for jiu-jitsu, like it's just like running it. It's stupid. Whatever. Like it's a waste of time. But even then, like with strength training, like a lot of times like people will do like really ineffective warm-ups. So I've just retooled my jiu-jitsu warm-ups and my strength conditioning warm-ups to this. So it doesn't really add much time. I just build it into what I already do. But again, if you know, if you're someone that you had no strength conditioning program, 10 to 15 minutes, you're going to see improvements.
Yeah, I could not recommend all grappling athletes to do this more. It's so, so, so beneficial. Since I've started doing this over the last, I'd say 18 months or so, I really haven't had an injury. And I used to be really bad with injuries. I used to get them and they suck. Like everyone appreciates how much it sucks to be out for 6 to 8 weeks and having to reduce your training, I always say to guys, just don't get injured. Now, obviously, when you're doing sport, there's always going to be a risk of that. And it's almost inevitable to a sense. But what can you do, like we said at the start of this, to one, mitigate that injury? And then when you do get that niggle or whatever, how can you be best prepared to come back from it? And I think these kin stretch type programs are so, so, so pivotal for this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, like I said, like I still will get little injuries, but they don't keep me off the mat more than, you know, a day or two at most.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's everything we need to cover for this. I'll say it one more time. I believe every BJJ athlete should be doing this. It's just what makes you a better athlete at the end of the day is time on the mats. And what is the biggest reason that stops you from getting time on the mats is being injured. Now, obviously, life gets in the way, but being injured is by far the biggest deterrent for you getting on the mats. 10 to 15 minutes a day, 4 to 5 times a week, you can do it while you're making your breakfast. There's really not a good excuse not to be doing this stuff. Just program it in. It's excellent stuff. Dr. Kigas, always such a good pleasure talking to you. Really, really, really valuable. I want to get a prediction. You've got Nogi World Championships. Tell the people at home, they've got money in their pocket. They want to place a bet. How's that going down?
Well, I'm not going there to not medal. So I'm going in to take my division.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure we will talk in the near future, but guys, keep a lookout. We are dropping our new Kin Stretch for BJJ course that Dr. Kickass has designed. This is extremely comprehensive. It is ridiculous the amount of content that you're going to be getting for this. I will also make the point that if you were to call Dr. Kickass and say, hey, I want to do one-on-one training with him, it'll cost you thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, where this course is literally going to be all that knowledge for a fraction of that. So we are dropping that. That is coming this weekend. Like I said, every athlete will benefit from something like this. And it literally takes 10 to 15 minutes every single day, 4 or 5 times a week.
Yeah, man, exactly. Like, again, it's what I do and it works. And we're going to see it more often for sure as we get the information out there.
Dr. Kigas, that's an awesome episode. I hope that highlights the value of this program and these concepts that we're talking about, and all the best for World Championships coming up. And I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, sir. Looking forward to it.
And there it is, another episode of the TFD Performance Podcast. We have had such a great response to our TFD Performance Hub, and we have just dropped our brand new course, Mobility for BJJ with Dr. Kigas. Dr. Kickass is one of the world leaders when it comes to BJJ performance, and this course has been made using the science of kin stretch, which helps BJJ athletes not only become stronger on the mats, but injury-proof their joints. This is truly a game changer for all BJJ athletes at every level of competition. If you want to start injury-proofing your body, then head to the link in the show notes and purchase our Mobility for BJJ course.